The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to PIs Declassified, an inside look at the world of private investigators. Your host is Francie Kaler, a noted private investigator. Francie and her guests take you behind the scenes and into the genuine, sometimes gritty business of investigation. You'll hear stories from the trenches with plenty of surprises. Here's your host, Francie Kaler.
Good morning, PIs Declassified. Today we're going to discuss depositions. They're similar to testifying in the witness stand in court, but there are differences as well. Adam Bisnick, a private investigator from Cincinnati, Ohio, joins us here to talk about this topic. Hi, Adam.
Hi, Francie. How are you today?
I'm great. Am I pronouncing your name correctly? Your last name?
You certainly are.
Okay,
yes,
great.
You certainly are. Physics, right. Yeah.
Okay. And I said you were in Cincinnati, but you just told me that you're in Houston. So, but I mean, you're based in Cincinnati. You just happen to be in Houston today.
I just happen to be in Houston here. I'm enjoying some nice warm weather down here with my wife. But yeah, I'm based out of Cincinnati, Ohio. My company, Gravitas Professional Services, is indeed based in the greater Cincinnati area and licensed in Ohio and Kentucky as a private investigative firm.
Oh, great. And, you know, you have such an interesting business name. I know there's a background to it. What does that mean?
that is a good question. When I started Gravitas, I was looking, as the title of this show, PI Declassified, indicates, we're trying to raise the bar for all investigators. Gravitas means, in Latin, it's one of these Roman virtues that you may have heard. It means sincerity, seriousness, integrity, and dignity. And I like to throw the word, it means awesomeness, on the back end there just to make it fun. We like to do great work and have a little fun with it at the same time, too.
There you go. That's great. And I have to also congratulate you for being in graduate school, because I love it when private investigators seek higher education, and I think it's just fabulous.
Thank you so much. I've got two classes left, so I'm chomping at the bit to get out of this. I graduate coming August and get to walk in December, so that should be a good time.
Yeah. Good for you. That is terrific. And your degree is in safety, security, and emergency management?
That's right. Safety, security, and emergency. It's a mouthful, but I love the classes there. And at Eastern Kentucky University, where I'm a graduate student, it's a great program. I absolutely love the professors there and the studies. I'm a huge fan of learning. So even though I'm writing 30-page papers every week, I'm still enjoying it.
Right,
I still
really
enjoy it. And somehow find time to do it. So it's enjoyable nonetheless.
So do you see your business? I know you specialize kind of in background checks and tenant screening, employment screening, that kind of thing. Do you see your business changing in any way after you get your master's?
You know, in a way it can. But one of the reasons why, well, there's several reasons why I studied that program in particular. Naturally, the Homeland Security studies kind of goes along with the investigative side, the security side. But then people wonder, well, why are you studying safety? What does it have to do with investigations? And really, there's a lot. So if
That's
you're
true.
In the workers' comp sphere, and your listeners out there who are doing workers' comp fraud, they know this well, that safety is an integral part of the management and the programs at these big corporations, these manufacturing companies out there that might be your clients. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times your point of contact is indeed a safety manager. So aside from being kind of a plan Z when it comes to the graduate program, it was plan A was to be able to talk directly to the safety managers and speak their language.
Right.
When I get into the boardroom, do a sales pitch or whatever it might be, you have intimate knowledge of how they might run their business and maybe even be able to advise them on things that they hadn't studied. So we study workers' comp law and workers' comp administration, and it all goes hand in hand with what we do. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And I also know that AS-IS, you're a member of AS-IS International. AS-IS has a certification also that is, I believe, supported by Homeland Security.
Fantastic.
Have you looked into that?
No, I have not. But I certainly will know.
The first time I was ever called for a deposition, it was kind of like a surprise. Really? You know, I have to do this? I had no idea. So was that your experience as well?
The first time, yes. You kind of get startled a little bit by it. You get surprised. You don't know what exactly to expect. That is kind of one of the reasons why, not only we're talking here today, why I wrote about it on my website in a blog article, but I want to tell you a story about why I wrote this. We can talk a little bit more about kind of the definition of what a deposition is as well. But to give you some context into why we want to talk about depositions, I'd love to tell you a quick story. You have time for that real quick?
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
Great. So a couple years ago, let's talk about the reason why we're doing this deposition. First off, this is a medical malpractice case. This happened a couple years ago, and I was the investigator assigned to the case. And the medical malpractice, as your listeners may or may not know, it's a huge deal. Hospitals insure their surgeons and doctors for a lot of money in the event that there's a medical malpractice suit against them. And that was the case here. I did surveillance on a local TV personality, and this woman had been in an automobile accident, injured herself very badly. And the deal was she claimed that she had a back injury so bad that not only could she not move around barely, she couldn't remain active, she couldn't live her life normally, that the details were so grim that she claimed that she, during sexual intercourse, could not feel sensation. And that's what we discovered in the deposition on her end. Now, we can't prove that last part, but we can certainly prove that she's active and can move around.
For sure.
So we were assigned to surveillance. We did surveillance. The legal team said, do a couple days surveillance on this lady, capture a video of her, write a report, and send it out. And for the first 2 days I did surveillance on her, I got some great video. We ended up getting video of her moving her garbage cans around. She was walking the dogs normally. The second day, she cleaned out her entire vehicle with a vacuum. She was on her knees bending over. We captured this all on video, presented it to the legal team, and they submitted it. What we come to find out, and this is where you were surprised, I was surprised as well, they shocked us a little bit and said, yeah, we're going to deposition. And I'd been deposed several times before, but the law team was only, it's really a boutique law firm, so it's really only, it's a one-person show, one-man shop. And we had been prepared by having conducted prior depositions, but in this case, we were not fully prepared, we come to find out. So day comes of the deposition, we go in, and assuming that we're only going to be there for maybe an hour, we assumed incorrectly. I was there for about 4 hours deposed on the video I obtained, and it was excruciating. The legal opposing counsel was there grilling me for those 4 hours, hour after hour. We took frequent breaks. Our counsel objected several times, and that's something that doesn't happen during a deposition. So long story short, I was ill-prepared for the deposition, and having figured this all out, I implemented it into our investigator's manual and then wrote this blog article in hopes of fully educating investigators and lawyers out there that we needed to be better prepared, and these are ways you can go about doing that.
And what was the main thing that you were unprepared for, Adam?
Certainly the length was the big problem. But I think there's a lot of, the amount of time we spend there was a big problem. But I think that overall, if I was to sum it up in one sentence here, I'd say that we needed to be on the same page as our lawyer. We needed to know and be prepared fully for what questions might come up. And that's, I think, one thing that lacks, and I think we could have been more aggressive with the law, the lawyer, to get prepared for.
You know, that happens fairly often, you know, where an attorney, whether it's in court or a deposition, the attorney will just call you and you're going to be there and you're running off the cuff without any preparation. I can't tell you how many times that happens, even with civilian witnesses.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the things that we had discussed briefly prior to coming on was that large law firms have these procedures in place. I was deposed years ago by a larger law firm who, you know how sophisticated law firms can be. You might have a trial attorney, you might have a workers' comp attorney, and you might have attorneys that specifically do witness prep. Well, that was the case with one of my first depositions. We met several times with the legal team and were prepped nearly for every question that could possibly come up. We were also prepped for how to look. You know, should we go in with a suit or should we dress? What's the standard procedure here? So they coached us every step along the way, and we saw a big discrepancy between the more sophisticated, larger law firms and the one-man shop. So we wanted to try to bridge that gap, and I wanted to make sure that every professional investigator out there takes the lessons learned and implements them.
Well, so what I hear you saying, Adam, is that it's up to us, the investigators, to say to the attorney, we need to get together before this deposition. I have a lot of questions that I need to ask you, and I need to know what you're going to ask me, and take that initiative to do that instead of waiting for the attorney to suggest it.
I think absolutely. I do. I think that you have to, even though it's not technically your job, and may not be in your job description, if you want to win the case, or at least provide your truthful and expert testimony, you have to take that next step and reach out to the legal team if they haven't already reached out to you. A lot of large legal teams have these documents in place, but it might be in your best interest as an investigator to write up a procedure or a manual for yourself in case this kind of situation comes up. And so, yeah, that's where I would stand on that. You do have to be aggressive to the legal team and say, hey, we need to get prepared for this. You know, we want to maybe win the case. You know, you never know whether or not you're actually going to win this, but you want to make sure you're absolutely prepared for this and give your best.
Right. Yeah. It's not our job to win the case, but it's certainly our job not to do any damage to the case.
Absolutely.
That's kind of a bad thing when your investigator damages your own case.
That's right. And that's one of the things that the opposing counsel will look for in their line of questioning. They're looking to not only look at the integrity of your video and report, they want to knock you down a peg or two. They want to poke holes in your credibility. So it might be best to, when it comes to your credibility, actually draft up a resume that highlights your key wins, your education, your experience, and present that to your attorney so they know that you are indeed a credible individual and that you've got a ton of experience doing stuff like this, so that they know that they're dealing with a professional.
You know, Adam, that's a really good point, because I see expert witnesses doing that all the time when they're preparing for cross-examination or preparing for direct examination in court. Well, they'll actually write up a script for the attorney to go on for their testimony. So that's a really good suggestion.
Sure.
So, Absolutely. Okay. So what's the purpose of a deposition anyway?
So, if we're talking about the legal definition of a deposition, what we're talking about is the investigators, in this case, just the witnesses, sworn out of court testimony. We all know that we've all seen TV shows where we see witnesses in court, but this actually is before that court testimony, and this takes place during the fact-finding point in the case called discovery. The opposing counsel in discovery will ask you questions about your evidence and your role in the case, and then your answers will be recorded, transcribed, and will become official court record, which can be referred to later in the case, specifically during that court, in the court. So that's what a deposition is.
Yeah, and the attorneys have a very wide latitude on what they can ask compared to what would happen in court. Like, for instance, they can go on a fishing expedition. On your background, your expertise, what you did prior to the investigation you did, what you did after, they can ask you all kinds of things about that wouldn't necessarily come up or wouldn't come up at all if you were in actually a court of law.
Yes, absolutely. Discovery is a very general term. They can ask you your credentials, specifically where you went to college, how long you've been a private investigator. They can ask you what kind of training you had leading up to being a private investigator. Mm-hmm. We got questions, I remember distinctly, in that medical malpractice case, we got questions from the attorney directed towards me that were specifically about how we videotaped the claimant. Were we on private property? Were we on public property? Did we go where we weren't supposed to go? What methods did we use? How did you transfer the video to this DVD? Mm. You know, trying to just poke holes in the integrity of how you captured your evidence. Mm-hmm. And that was the whole goal, was to try to eliminate that evidence altogether from the case so that, you know, that just went away and it wouldn't be part of the opposing counsel's argument.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, this is so interesting, Adam. We're going to take a quick break, though. We'll be right back with Adam Bisnick. Stay tuned.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com. Need to hire a private investigator? Ask for their professional association affiliations. When an investigator asks Francie Kaler about associations, she says to first join a state trade association. Francie belongs to the California Association of Licensed Investigators, or CALI. It's the largest association of its kind in the world. CALI's main focus is networking, training, and legislative advocacy. If you need a detective in California, contact CALI at cali-pi.org or call 1-800-350-CALI. For a national association, Francie's choice is the National Council of Investigation and Security Services, or NCISS. For over 35 years, the Council's primary mission has been to represent its members before the United States Congress and governmental agencies. Find the Council at NCISS.org or call 1-800-445-8408. NCISS and CALI are great places to look for a qualified private investigator. Tell them you heard it from Francie on PIs Declassified. Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com. You're listening to PIs Declassified with Francie Kaler. You can call into the program. We'll take questions and comments at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You can also email your question to Francie. Send it to FRANCIE at PIsDeclassified.com. Now, here's Francie Kaler.
Depositions are an integral part of the legal discovery process, and we were just talking, Adam, you were just saying that how every detail of your investigation was analyzed and scrutinized and questioned, really with the idea of tripping you up, I guess. Is that the way, what your take was?
That's right. And one of the classic, just to piggyback on that, one of the classic things that they do, this is something you'll frequently see when you are giving a deposition, so be prepared for this mentally, is they'll have a copy of your report, and they'll have a copy of your video, naturally. Mm-hmm. So you'll be forced to watch your entire video, whether it's 5 minutes or several hours worth, but then you'll be asked to read word by word your entire report, whether that's 2 pages or 20 pages. So that can take up a big chunk of the deposition taking time period, but be prepared for that. And be prepared for them to scrutinize every single line of that report. So you better make sure that even before going in, that your report is up to snuff and it's truthful and it's correct and accurate.
Very good advice. And again, you know, you're never going to be completely prepared because the opposing counsel is always going to think of something that you haven't thought of when you were preparing. There's going to be those zingers that come at you. But I guess the basic thing for what we were talking about, you always tell the truth, right?
Yes, absolutely. I think that's probably number one, Francie. You definitely want to be truthful. That should be the first and foremost thing. As soon as you start making things up and you're ethically wrong and you start lying, just things will go astray and it's never going to work out best for you. So always number one, tell the truth.
No matter how much you want to help your attorney client.
That's right.
You have to be excruciatingly honest. And if you don't know the answer to the question, you have to say you don't know.
You say you don't know. So that's another thing. If one of the big things that I would say is answer the question that is asked of you. If
yes.
It's a yes or no question, just answer yes or no. Like you said, if you don't know the answer to the question, just say, I don't know. If you don't remember, say, I don't remember, I don't recall, maybe more accurate, but never elaborate. If you try to insert your opinion, if you try to insert secondhand, hearsay, don't do that. Just answer the question as it is asked of you. So don't try to elaborate and never offer up information that isn't asked in the question.
And if you can't answer yes or no, because sometimes those questions are posed to you that they want to get that yes or that no, you say, I can't answer it, yes or no. And that gives your attorney the opportunity to come back and get you to expand on what you wanted to say. Because some questions you just can't answer that way.
That's right. You're not the all-seeing eye here. You're not omnipresent. You don't have answers for every question. You can't answer every question. So, again, as if they ask a question you simply don't have the answer to, you say, I can't really answer that question or I don't recall at the moment. And they're forced to move on to the next question. It's not your problem.
And I see often people start to answer the question before the question is complete.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big thing. There's a couple tactics. One is that, and this is something you can improve upon in your answer question, or when you're answering the question, is let the opposing counsel finish the question. Let them finish it. Don't try to interject in that question before it's finished. Don't even nod your head yes or no or shake your head. Just wait from the finish. That's a tactic that they can use to get an answer out of you even before they've finished the question. Let them finish. But the reason why you want to do that is wait that half second is because if the question's illegal or the question, based on what your lawyer is overhearing, it allows them a chance to object.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to answer a question that's not pertinent or is just leading whatever the legal circumstances may be. Wait for the question to be asked, and then wait if your lawyer wants to object to that line of questioning, let them do that. So it also gives you a chance to think about your answer on top of that. So, yeah, that's a definite tactic you want to use there. Give it a half second before every question is asked.
Yeah, I think some, just a side thought here, some attorneys like to make you feel very comfortable, conversational. So it's like you're just having a conversation. And then that kind of lures you into comfort where you maybe could speculate like you would in a conversation. Well, it could have been this or could have been that, and that's would be a disaster.
Yeah, you certainly don't want to speculate. Again, we talked about you don't want to speculate on the answer and you don't want to interject in the question that you don't have. I want to talk about another little tactic. These are educated people. Lawyers have been to school way longer than I have, and they've been doing this for, not to mention they've been doing depositions every single day if they, are a part of the law firm that handles that. So they've got a lot of tricks and tips. And one of those is, on top of what we just talked about, the classic pregnant pause, or I should say, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought there.
Where it's just silent and you feel like you need to fill in the space?
Exactly. You don't want to fill in the space. The pregnant pause, the lawyer may ask a question, and they'll just wait as long as you have to wait. I mean, if they don't have a question, they're just making a statement, don't fill in the blank. Don't offer them up something that is going to help them. Don't offer up an answer you don't have. So avoid that, be aware of it, and wait for that question to come about.
Yeah, that's a good point. There may be a tactic of that attorney to get you to cough up with some more information by just intentionally creating that pause.
Yeah, and as you said, these people aren't your friends. They've got tactics. They're smart people. Mm-hmm. They may be buddy-buddy with you, like you said, but your job is to be professional, courteous. You don't have to be friends with them. You're there to answer questions, and that's pretty much it. They're not your friends.
Mm-hmm. And the opposing counsel often acts like they don't know anything. They're just asking questions because they don't really know anything about what you did, but they really do. So they're trying to see if you make a mistake. See if they have information that you say something different, and so it's going to be an aha moment, a gotcha moment.
Exactly. That's probably never the case. They go into these depositions incredibly prepared.
Yes.
And this might be another tactic just to try to make it seem like they're stumbling across information that's, like you said, an aha moment. They go into these very prepared. Lawyers should be incredibly prepared. They know a lot about the subject matter, maybe in many cases more than you do. So it's an act. A lot of times they'll pull that move where they'll try to pretend like they don't know what they're talking about. They're naive and you're educating them. Mm-hmm. But again, just answer the questions as it's stated and don't react with body language negatively or positively, when they come to these little aha moments.
What do you think, Adam, about memorizing your testimony?
I think it sounds like it's a bad move. I would not try to practice memorizing your testimony. Certainly you want to be prepared for any questions, but I think you get into some problems trying to memorize your testimony. The best bet is to stick with, let them answer the questions, or I should say let them ask the questions as they're asked, and you can never truly prepare, like you said earlier, you can never truly prepare for all the questions they're going to ask. And memorizing your testimony, you go down a negative path there. So just let them do their thing and answer them as you truthfully as you can.
Right, right. What other tips do you have for either preparing yourself or being inside the deposition itself?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that one thing that sometimes gets overlooked, and this is something that I have a little bit of experience with, is when you arrive at a deposition, you should not be bringing any documents with you. What I mean by that is leave your report at home, leave copies of the video that you shot at home or in the office. Now, don't bring those. Those are now, because you brought them in to that office, those are now part of discovery. Those can be discovered. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't submit for some odd reason, if you did not submit a video or a report or missing or you ripped out a page accidentally, that now becomes part of deposition. It can be part of your sworn testimony. For example, when I was in a video conference doing a deposition, I brought in a copy of the video because it was requested of me. Opposing counsel didn't have that. We played the video, but I brought in four separate copies of this video, assuming that there might be multiple people would need them.
Mm-hmm.
And the opposing counsel assumed that there was extra video that I had not provided to the legal team. Well, that wasn't the case.
And they were four copies of the same thing.
Yeah, same video. It was just four copies of it.
Yeah.
And he assumed incorrectly that it was separate videos altogether that I had not submitted. So he attempted to hop right on that, thinking that he was going to get evidence. And I had to tell him, no, these are just the same exact video, just, you know, exact copies. So beware of that. They'll certainly use that as an opportunity to get more documents or discover things that you may have brought in.
Right.
So, yeah.
So did you have to watch four videos? I'm just curious.
Thankfully, no. It was just the one. So just the 1 hour or so long video was enough.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess what you're saying is everything you do is work product until the attorney decides to turn it over.
Mm-hmm.
You agree with that?
That's correct. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah, so if you're bringing into the deposition, that makes it fair game.
It's now, it can officially be part of discovery. And on just to piggyback on that, there are other things that can be discovered that you don't even bring into the deposition. One of the tactics that you might take is, again, with the hearsay thing, let's say in the deposition, the lawyer starts down a path of questioning where they're asking about timesheets. That was a thing that happened in one of my depositions. The legal team, the opposing counsel, asked about the timesheet to attempt to match that timesheet up with the physical surveillance that we provided in our report.
Really?
They would ask those questions, and their attempt was to try to get that into official record. And they were trying to, again, like I said, poke holes in our argument, and matching up those timesheets might have provided some miscalculation or some missing piece of evidence that we didn't provide. You know, but our timesheets were accurate, so it wasn't like there was anything to look for. But that was another way. They're gonna dig deep into things that you did bring and things that you didn't bring. And they're going to look at your timesheets. They're going to look at potentially invoices. So if you're charging your client several $1,000 for a surveillance, they're going to ask for that invoice and see if those line items match up to the days you did surveillance. They could potentially ask about procedures and protocols in your investigative manual. So even though you don't think it's a smart idea to keep those things updated or it's just too time consuming, it's probably in your best bet to keep those things in line, because those can easily be called into discovery and be used as official court record. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, therefore, another reason to get together with your attorney client ahead of time and go through all of these areas, what they're going to ask you, what he's going to ask you or she's going to ask you, what documents you should have or shouldn't have with you, how what the process is going to be, what the opposing counsel's like, all the questions you would have, you need to get answered prior to the day you go in for that deposition.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Another great reason to get prepped on your end and on the other end, prep your legal team so you know exactly what to expect when you get into that deposition. Yeah, great point.
And, you know, sometimes you're asked about a document, so you really need to see that document before you answer the question.
That's true. Again, that's the speculation part. If you don't know about that document, it's probably not best to offer up any information about it. If you have no idea what, you know, let's say they ask about the timesheet, you don't know what's on it because you don't have that great of a memory. You're not going to say, you're not going to say, I guess, or I think. It needs to be a more solid and accurate answer. You'd say, you know, you might even say, I don't know. I don't recall. I don't know at this time. Again, they're trying to dig for holes in your argument and your credibility. And by you offering up things that you can't possibly know about or speculate about, That's not going to help your argument. So I'd avoid offering up things that you can only guess about.
And the thing that you really always have to keep in mind is they're looking, exactly what you just said, they're looking for holes in your testimony. So any little thing can be blown up under a magnifying glass. It's amazing how one word or one statement or one entry into a document could change the whole tenor of the deposition.
Absolutely. And this is where you got to keep your cool. And one of the things that they are looking for on top of the holes in the physical documents that you have is your body language. A lot of private investigators out there are body language experts. They can tell if you're lying many times. They see a shift in your body language. Same with legal experts. They study body language, and they can tell if you are uncomfortable. And your job is to stay cool, stay calm. Don't show any signs of boredom, anger, you're exasperated, you're tired. If you need a few minutes rest here because you're in a four-hour deposition, ask your legal counsel if you can take a five-minute recess, come back after having got some water and take a quick break. You know, you got to keep it cool there. And that's one thing that legal counsel are looking to get out of you is those little minute micro, expressions that they can pounce on. So avoid those altogether. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. All right. We need to take another quick break. We'll be right back. That was Adam.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com. Need to hire a private investigator? Ask for their professional association affiliations. When an investigator asks Francie Kaler about associations, she says to first join a state trade association. Francie belongs to the California Association of Licensed Investigators, or CALI. It's the largest association of its kind in the world. CALI's main focus is networking, training, and legislative advocacy. If you need a detective in California, contact CALI at cali-pi.org or call 1-800-350-CALI. For a national association, Francie's choice is the National Council of Investigation and Security Services, or NCISS. For over 35 years, the council's primary mission has been to represent its members before the United States Congress and governmental agencies. Find the council at nciss.org or call 1-800-445-8408. NCISS and CALI are great places to look for a qualified private investigator. Tell them you heard it from Francie on PIs Declassified. Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your questions. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com. You're listening to PIs Declassified with Francie Kaler. You can call into the program. We'll take questions and comments at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You can also email your question to Francie. Send it to FRANCIE at PIsDeclassified.com. Now, here's Francie Kaler.
So we're talking about depositions today, and even though it sounds probably counterintuitive that a deposition is much more difficult than being on a witness stand in front of a whole courtroom of people, it really is. So, Adam, I was just going to tell you the best advice I ever had from anybody about preparing for a deposition or being present in the deposition is this is an expert witness who I know pretty well that I've worked with a number of years. And she said, sit down, put your arms on the arms of the chair in an open position with your feet planted firmly on the floor and just relax. And if there's zingers from the opposing counsel, just let them go by. just like, and she gave an example of being in a martial arts situation where you're in a defensive standpoint, but you just step aside when that zinger comes through. And I thought that was just such great advice, because that's what happens.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah. So, so let's go through the pointers that you think are really key points for being a good opponent.
For sure, absolutely. We've got a list of 10 tips that you can use to be an expert witness. And you know, the point of writing this was it needed to be short so everybody could read it very easily and kind of get an idea of how to be great at giving an effective deposition. Number one in that list was, first and foremost, be professional. You are a professional private investigator, so act as if dressed neatly, not over the top. Again, we talked briefly about you don't necessarily need to wear a three-button double-breasted suit. You can wear business casual, you know, slacks, dress shoes, shave, wear a button-down collared shirt if you're a man, perhaps a business suit if you're a woman, and act courteously. So be professional overall was the first one.
Yeah, absolutely. And from, you know what? And from the time you drive up and get out of your car, just because you're not in the deposition room doesn't mean people aren't watching you. So be prepared for that, because they're probably looking out the window waiting for you to get there, seeing what kind of person they're dealing with.
Absolutely. If you drive up in a vehicle, a used car with busted out windows and broken taillights, they'll probably see you as a maybe not so professional investigator, and they might jump all over you for the opportunity to tear apart your credibility. So
exactly,
yeah. Yeah,
every component is fair game. Okay, what else?
So number two was be candid. We talked about this early on. Be candid. If the question asks for a yes or no, just the yes or no will do. Don't elaborate or volunteer information, especially if you don't know exactly what took place. Never volunteer secondhand information. So be candid was number two.
Okay. I totally agree with that. And we've already talked about your number three, the beware of the pregnant pause. And, you know, I mean, we even work with that pregnant pause. Those of us that do interviews with witnesses often use a pregnant pause to make sure that we're getting all the information. So attorneys use it as well, intentionally.
That's right. And it sounds like it's a tactic a lot of people are using. But, yeah, absolutely. The investigators have been using this for forever. If you go into the Reed interrogation or Wicklander-Zelowski, whatever it might happen to be, you'll come across some form of the pregnant pause where you'll specifically and intentionally allow your claimants or person you're investigating to fill in the blanks for you. So on the opposite end, as a deponent, avoid that fill-in-the-blank opportunity. I know we all want to sound smart and say that you have all the answers, but avoid that altogether. As you said, put your feet firmly on the ground, and I would like to say just be like a Buddhist monk. Just wait for your opportunity to answer the question. Don't fill in the blank there.
And it's not your job to educate the opposing counsel. which sometimes we, you know, in our ego, we want to show everything we know, but it's not our job to educate them.
That's right. And again, that's one of those tactics we discussed. They may not be educated based on what they're asking, but there's a pretty good chance that they know exactly what they're doing, and they are incredibly educated about what's going on. So avoid that one altogether.
Yeah. And your point about leaving your documents at home or leaving any of your evidence at home is really important, because I don't know about you, but I keep all my case file things in the same place. Like if I made notes to the file or analyzed a witness or something else, I have that all in my case file. So if I brought my case file into the deposition room, that would all be fair game. That would be a nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That was number four. Leave those documents at home. You definitely don't want to offer up more information than has already been presented as part of written procedure, because that stuff's going to be discovered. That you come in there carrying a manila folder with all your notes and all your little pieces of evidence, now that's part of the case. And it probably shouldn't be. It's not official record, but avoid bringing those in. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is another thing we did talk about, but I think it's worth mentioning again, is if you don't know the answer, you say you don't know the answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. If you don't know it, don't feel compelled to come up with an answer. Just because a question is lingering out there doesn't mean you have to answer it. If you don't know the answer, say, I don't know. And if you don't recall what was being asked, that's it. Just say, I don't recall. It's very simple. I don't know. I don't recall.
Right. And you know, there's that pressure that you're supposed to know all these answers, mm-hmm. and why don't you know the answer? And you think that your expertise, you mm-hmm. should be able to give an answer. So saying, I don't know, feels very uncomfortable.
Exactly. It's true. We all have that ego, like you said. We want to have the answers to everything, but that's not what this is all about. You gotta check yourself, and you do have to limit and reduce, you know, the quote-unquote expertise you have by, you know, redacting what you're saying here. Keep it very short and sweet. That's probably one of the better axioms you could use.
So Adam, say I'm the opposing attorney and I'm questioning you and I ask you, say, a specific question about the, mm-hmm. say, we were talking earlier about a medical malpractice case or a mm-hmm. medical workers' comp case. So I ask you a question. What are you going to do? What's your reaction initially?
Sure.
I ask you the question.
I want to take a little time to let you finish the question completely. I want to pause for a split second before I answer. That gives me time to think about what I have to say. And maybe even more importantly, it gives our counsel the opportunity to object to that question. It could be a legal question. It could be, I don't know the legal argument for that. But you just want to give them an opportunity to step in and object to a line of question that they don't think is right. So, give yourself a little bit of time before you answer each question.
At the same time, I think, there's probably a part of time that would be too long, that sounds like you're trying to make something up. So mm-hmm. long pauses wouldn't be good, it seems to me.
they may jump on that one. If you take forever to, and this is true of interview and interrogations with private investigators, if you're sitting there and people seem to have the wheels turning in their brain, just, did I do this? Did I do that? I couldn't remember. If they're taking way too long, that might also be an indicator that something else is happening behind the scenes. So you may not want to take, like you said, too long to answer a question, but maybe just long enough. I know that's putting a lot of pressure on opponents to answer questions in a specific amount of time. But absolutely. You don't want to take in an hour to answer a question that's, you know, yes or no question, for sure.
Yeah. And then one of the things that you've mentioned in your list of pointers here is about humor. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of us have a bit of a, those of us that are private investigators and probably also former law enforcement, have a little morbid sense of humor, maybe a little sarcasm when we are asked something that we think is a funny question or a stupid question, mm-hmm. we might react in the same vein, mm-hmm. and that would be also another disaster.
Yeah, for sure. Now, here's the funny thing. I've heard, I've been in the court where an investigator that I'm colleagues with gave his testimony in court in front of a grand jury, and somehow his one-liner that he used actually went over incredibly well, and the grand jury started cracking up. And I can't tell you exactly about it, but I would tell you this, limit your humor, avoid it altogether when it comes to the deposition. And I wouldn't say use it, I'm not endorsing that in the court of law, but you do want to avoid jokes and humor altogether. It doesn't come off well in written transcripts. And as the internet says, you know, there's no such thing as sarcastic font. So avoid that altogether, especially when it comes to depositions. You're a professional. You have to be courteous and straightforward with your answers there.
You know what it boils down to? We almost have to, in a deposition as an investigator, we almost have to be perfect, pristine, you know, vanilla, straight arrow. I don't know how many adjectives I can come up with, but just, you know, we're just a vehicle at that point of answering the questions for what we did or what happened on a particular case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big thing. I think the end-all, be-all is you want to present yourself as a competent witness. You want to win the case, certainly. You want to use this opportunity to position yourself as an expert, someone who can be called upon as a witness, someone who can be utilized as a private investigator many, many times again. You're impressing not only the opposing counsel, you're impressing your counsel, perhaps the judge. This is an opportunity to be, as you say, pristine. So use it wisely.
Well, and just like Joe Friday, just state the facts. That's all you have to
state the facts. That's right. Be truthful, accurately. State it as accurately as you can. One of the things I read was that I wrote about was just you don't want to give insight about someone else's feelings or thoughts. You're not in their brain, so don't pretend like you are.
And have you ever had a situation where the attorney was trying to actually trip you up?
Geez, it might have been every single question they asked. Now that you think about it.
Probably so.
In general, yeah.
But I mean,
not specifically. Go ahead. I want to hear.
Okay,
yours.
Something like misstating. I had a situation in trial where the district attorney misstated what I said, and again, it's, you know, it's easy. You got to listen really carefully. It's easy to agree or disagree, and then you realize, oh, wait a minute, that wasn't correct. She actually tried to, she had my notes up on the board, and she was trying to make my notes say something they didn't say. And you can't let that go.
Yes.
You've got to say, no, that's not what it says.
Yeah, that seems to be a little tactic there, and you don't want to let the opposing counsel, the examiner, put words in your mouth. You don't want to accept voluntarily their characterization of your report. You know, your time that you put in, your personality, the events that transpired. You want to, if anything, rephrase the answer or the question into a kind of your own words and put, you know, put that to bed. Put it to your exact phrasing. So don't let them take advantage of you that way by just having them answer, you know, investigate that way. So, yeah, it's a little tactic you have to be aware of as well.
That's a really good point. I really like that where you just said rephrase their question with your answer. Mm-hmm. And that makes a complete deposition. And you know what, Adam? We're out of time. I know that we could get it to delve in so many more areas here, but I hope we've touched the tip of the iceberg for folks that would be interested in delving more into how they handle their depositions. So thank you for sharing your expertise, Adam. It was great having you on the show. Good luck on your getting your master's. That'll be fabulous.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
All right. And for the rest of you, tune in again next week as we declassify more real stories from real investigators like Adam Visnick. It's PIs Declassified. I'm Francie Kaler. Thanks so much for listening.
You've been listening to PIs Declassified with your host, Francie Kaler. Tune in every Thursday at noon Eastern Time. That's 9 a.m. for you West Coast listeners. PIs Declassified explores stories of deceit, mystery, and detectives unraveling the truth. Every Thursday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, here on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
I'm Jesse Gonzalez, Vice President at Kmart. Did you know that premature birth is the number one killer of babies in the United States, or that survivors can face a lifetime of serious health problems? But you can help. Join me in Kmart for the March for Babies Walk. We'll work together to raise funds for research and programs that help the marginalized fight premature birth and birth defects and improve the health of moms and babies. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.